All right. With this small group, we will go ahead and get started.
Ready.
Okay. So first on the agenda, we have our board policy for second reading, which is the code of conduct. Nothing has changed from first to second reading. So does anyone have any questions, comments about that one?
Oh, I actually had a question. On the disciplinary options on level one and then disciplinary options on level two, what's the difference between counseling and mediation, and are those defined, or are we just kind of going with it?
So counseling could be meeting with the counselor. We do also have contracts with counselors, so it could be contracted counseling. Mediation is the parties could agree to kind of work out differences. So it's a different way to try to resolve something. And remember, state law it mandates that we have some of these disciplinary options for restorative practices.
Right.
So counseling and mediation would fall under that restorative practice. And obviously, for students, part of the thing that we're wanting to do is to stop behaviors. Exactly.
Right, right.
So it may be that, depending on the behavior,
right,
counseling or mediation between the parties would be helpful. So that
okay,
misconduct doesn't continue.
So you feel that having a conference with the students that were involved will help?
I think in some circumstances it does, yes. And in fact, there's research to show that. That's part of several years ago, Tennessee state law changed because of some of those practices going from strictly not just punitive, but seeing a reduction in behavior also based upon restorative practices. So yes.
But of course, but it can be a case by case basis.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's where you're probably going to go, is if the two shouldn't meet.
Right.
Right?
And if that's the case, they're not going to. Both parties would have to agree.
It might not be just two people.
It
says in who and others that were harmed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you might have a whole gang of kids come in and gang up on them, and you know, I don't know if that's good or not.
And I think, and I hear what you're saying. I think that our administrators have all of these different tools in their toolbox, and dependent upon the situation, you're right, it may not be the best thing to do that. But in some situations, I do think that has been helpful to the parties.
And that's why it says on line 8 and 9, when appropriate, so that
right,
the administrators can determine if it's not appropriate and there's going to be a gang-up situation, they probably wouldn't use that. But it was listed in all of them, so that's why they pulled it up to the top to be available as an option for all levels.
And sometimes it's little guys, because like we get lots of calls, and we'll have little things happen, like in elementary school, that they try to, like, the counselor might talk about it, and, you know, that helps them going forward, because a lot of times the little ones don't exactly know what they're doing, and I think that helps them.
It becomes a learning moment.
Absolutely. It's a teaching moment. You're right.
Okay, any other questions on that one? Going through for second reading. Okay, so then we're on to the section for first reading, and as you can see, there's a theme here. So we have 6 items, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 5 of them are brand new. So I'll let Dana go ahead.
Sure, and I'll kind of explain why we have some new policies. So there have been a few changes this last legislation with Tennessee state law, but there have been a lot of changes with the State Board of Education. So they were tasked with creating new rules and new regulations. So a lot of the changes that you're gonna see mirror the state board, either their policy or their regulations. And kind of as an overarching theme, it gives the charter school authorizer, which could be the Williamson County School Board, or it could be the State Charter Commission. So it gives them more guidance than we have had in years past, and it sets out the expectations of what a high-quality charter school looks like, and it also gives some additional responsibility if the Williamson County School Board authorizes a charter. There will be oversight by the board that there wasn't previous. I'll hit some of those, but I wanted to give you an overview about why we're going from one policy to six.
Okay, and just as an overall on the charter schools, when they appeal, if we've turned them down, and they appeal, but the state approves them being in our county, are we still set by these policies?
We are not.
Good.
That's a great question.
That still holds true.
Yes, that still holds true. Okay. There are then, at that point, the State Charter Commission would be the authorizer. They have new guidance as well.
Okay, good.
Some of it's the same as ours, some of it's different. Mm-hmm. But yes, this would only apply if we are the authorizer as far as the oversight.
Right.
Now we still, the application changes a little bit. There's a few nuances. But both, no matter who the authorizer is, we now have some, they have articulated standards. And I think it will be helpful.
I think so too, yeah.
For us, in addition to the rubric, which would continue, but we've never had set out what our role, you know, to this degree.
Right.
I think it's very helpful. Yeah. I think one of the policies was like 40-something pages. Oh. So they've put a lot of work into, state boards put a lot of work into it.
Okay, cool.
So these policies, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Andy.
These policies don't override the state rubric for the whole?
No, good question. There would still be that state rubric like we've used to look at the last two charter schools. There would still be one, but we would definitely also be looking at these principles, the authorizing principles, and a lot of the requirements now are if Williamson County School Board authorized a charter, there's a lot more guidance. In years past, if we had authorized, we had to enter into a contract for 10 years, and that was basically it. This gives us, if we authorize a charter school, it will give the board a lot of direction on what your responsibilities are.
I have actually two questions.
Sure.
You mentioned in the past, have we had a charter school before?
We've had two applications.
But not.
We've had three total applications, but no, we have not ever authorized a charter school.
And then on this first policy that we're talking about, it says charter school governing board.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they establish? Is there
correct?
Okay.
Correct.
So that would just be a separate entity that they just. Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes, they have. If we were to authorize a charter school, then they would have a board who was very similar.
Yeah, just directs,
to y'all.
Mm-hmm.
In years past, there was little to no oversight by the Williams County School Board if they authorized a charter school. That has changed. And as we go through these, they kind of build on each other.
Okay.
So,
a lot of the same languages. Yeah. A lot of the same languages in all of them, and which is the guidelines right from the state.
Correct.
So it seems like we're just stacking up policy on top of policy for some reason.
Well, I think it's important for the board to understand the changes. And I also think it's important for the public to understand what everybody's responsibility is. So, yeah, a lot of it is a restatement of state board policy, state law. but this puts it all in one place if we need it.
Easier to look up.
It
it's
is.
It's much easier to look up, yeah.
And my, you know, I think it's, given how different this looks compared to the last two that this board has voted, I thought it was important to go ahead and put it in policy.
So that's the first one.
All right.
Second one.
So the first one just sets out the authorizing principles. As always, we would want, if we were going to authorize a charter school, a high-quality charter school, because they would be a part of our district, that school would have to adhere to the quality charter authorizing standards. And this, the next ones in bold, are the kind of big ideas that the state board has said would be high standards for charter schools. These are in line with nationwide standards for charter schools. So this is definitely something that has been around for a while. We just have, as a state, have not adopted anything, because remember when we started charter schools in 2011 was when that first law passed. So we want those high standards. If you're an authorizer and that charter school does not meet the standards and targets established either in state law or the charter agreement, the board, Williamson County School Board, would have the authority to put them on a probationary plan and ultimately close them if they did not meet those high standards. The school autonomy, just like you mentioned, Donna, they would have their own governing board independent from the school board, and that board would have that authority to make lots of decisions. They assume responsibility, and they have to, for success or failure of the schools. And then the last thing is that that board, we would ensure clarity, consistency, and public transparency, because remember, these are public dollars if it is a public charter school. It also is clear, they've got to provide appropriate services to all enrolled students. They would need to follow all state and federal laws. And that's something that we have looked at whenever we've had an application for charter schools. Their board would be responsible for fiscal responsibility and transparency. So that's kind of the big ideas of authorizing that charter school.
I have a question.
Sure.
Do we have, just while we're still talking about the global ideas on this, do we have anywhere in our, in Williamson County, because it looks like it varies from county to county, but who is the authorizer, and do we have that, like, defined in our county?
In that defined... Like that y'all are the authorizer?
Well, it just says several times, the authorizer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, in our county, who
it would be
you.
It would be the Williamson County School Board.
Okay,
so
okay,
like
okay.
If the charter
I just
school
didn't know
applies,
who
no, that's fine. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Vote to approve it, we're the authorizer.
Right,
but
I just didn't know.
They can appeal after two applications being denied.
And that's
to the
when
state,
it state board.
And
correct.
They would be the authorizer.
Okay, because it was kind of ambiguous in the state law. So I was like,
I
are
think
we the authorizer?
The, yeah, no, that's fair. I think that in. I know, in one of these policies, let me figure out which one it is.
It's fine.
That was just my question,
so
you
answered
it.
It
does set it out. Mm-hmm. When we get to the charter school oversight,
yeah,
it says at the beginning of that policy, once the Williamson County Board of Education authorizes a public charter school, then the board shall oversee
okay,
and evaluate. So, yes, to your point, Yes.
It was a little ambiguous in the state.
It does.
Think,
in the law and the rules, they call it authorizer because it could be two different bodies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I'm using it in here and I don't say state,
yeah.
Charter school commission, it is
thank
your
you.
Board. Mm-hmm.
What is that authorizer fee, Dana?
The initial fee can be no greater for the application.
Well, just line 6 on the charter school agreements. It just it states the amount.
Are you, we're going ahead there?
Yeah, well, I just noticed.
We can probably just look at all of them kind of together.
I'm sorry, which one are you on, Dan?
Charter school agreements.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll go. So if it's an application, it can be no more than $2,500. With an agreement, I believe.
We're at the max.
Yes, we are at the max.
And we have to pay that?
No, that is what
they pay to apply.
They'll have to pay. Mm-hmm. That's what I was wondering.
They pay us.
What should we have to pay?
No.
We don't want your application.
Of course, I wouldn't doubt it. You know.
They did. They pay us, and they have done that in the past.
Now, if someone withdraws, do they get their money back?
Well, so that's happened once,
yeah.
And we did. Mm-hmm. We did refund it. Superintendent Golden determined, because we had two applications, it was early in the process,
mm-hmm.
and the work would have been done anyway with the other application.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So yes, we did, but we don't have to.
Gotcha.
But we did, because that was probably the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to move to, in that circumstances. All right, I'm going to move to charter school applications. Couple of changes. This policy we've had for several years. Changes are in blue. Now, once there is an application, superintendent or designee, we have to determine whether the sponsor selected the correct application. There are two different categories. One category is if the charter school has another charter school somewhere, it's one application. If it's a standalone charter school that is nowhere else, it's a different application. So that's a piece that we would look at. We have to determine that after we receive their letter of intent. And if it is not the correct application, then we've got the sponsor has to correct if they picked the wrong category. The letter of intent is a form, and it's you put an X in it. So
if they did the wrong form, how do we know if it's a standalone or not? I mean, we're supposed to let them know it's the wrong form, but if we don't know if they're a standalone or not, what do we do? Research and Google them and see if they have more than one?
Yes.
Okay.
Which quite honestly, so they come to Superintendent Golden and myself. I do that anyway.
Okay.
Just because
you're curious.
Curious. So the other change in the application process, there had never been a possibility of an electronic copy. They had to, in the law, provide a large paper copy. And we asked them they had to supply 3 copies. So now that it can be an electronic copy, which is easier, I think, for everybody. And because of that, since it's not a paper copy, the time frame has changed, because you can send an electric copy up until midnight, 11:59, whereas before it was 4:30, because that is when the district office closed. Law also changed on the appointment of the review team. So y'all may remember in years past, if we get a letter of intent, then there is a review team put together. So this past year, we did not get a letter of intent. We don't have a review team. If we get one this coming for this next school year, then Superintendent Golden would appoint the review team. And then ultimately, board members, you are going to vote on that and name a chair.
So the board member has been kicked off the island on that one? They're not allowed on the committee anymore?
I've noticed that, too.
Change in state law.
Oh, wow.
Which
okay.
state law is
it's,
that?
It is. Let me get to my last page. 4913, 106, as well as State Board of Education Policy 6.111.
So that's where we see on line 25, where in 27, where mm-hmm. it used to be the board shall appoint a review team. And then so on this team that's making a decision on behalf of all of Williamson County, there's no member of the school board that is a part of that.
Not a part of that team.
But we make the ultimate
decision. But you
vote.
Make the ultimate
decision.
The
vote. Okay.
Yeah. They would make the recommendation to the board.
Correct.
And we would vote.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd still see, I mean, last time we got to look at the application.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You would mm-hmm. still see yeah. that. Absolutely. You would still see the application. You would still see you saw everybody's rubric. You would still see all of that information. In years past, we have had a board member, in the last two, we've had a board member on there.
Oh, that was Jay, wasn't it?
Jay was on one. The last one we did, Jay was. And the one before then was KC.
Okay.
And it is a huge time commitment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jay and KC both spent a lot. I can't even begin to tell you the hours.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing is a huge process.
Absolutely it is. Yes. But yeah, y'all will still vote. You will still see.
Yes.
And still ask questions. Absolutely, we're not trying to keep you out of it. All of that remains the same.
Well, will the committee meetings be public or
no?
Because
they're internal, just like staff meetings.
And since is
they
that
have never been public?
Okay.
And is it because there's no board member on it? Does
right.
that? Yeah.
It's a working meeting,
yeah.
just like. Faculty meeting is just
yeah.
like HR staff meeting
yeah.
is. We did not, what we did in years past, because we met at all different times, all different days, sometimes in person, sometimes via Zoom. We did record. There, part of the application process is an interview by the app, the applicant comes, meets with everybody. We asked questions. We did tape that. If it was on Zoom, we recorded it.
So then we can see that.
Absolutely.
Because that's a huge process. And
oh, yeah.
To be able to vote on it, the more knowledge is better.
Well, the last one we had, I believe they came back. The first one really failed. The second application
mm-hmm.
looked real good, but financially...
That's where it was.
Yeah. All they said was, if this passes, we'll look for donors. But basically,
yeah, it was that.
Basically,
yeah,
that's exactly what it was. And it's like, are you kidding? Because if they fail, we pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
See? So, but you get to see, you'll see everything.
Oh, yeah. There's a lengthy.
Yeah.
And part of it, too, Donna, was every person of the committee, and I'm... trying to think how many people.
I was
getting
ready to ask
that,
yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not going to get the number right, but I'm going to say it was between 12 and 15. The first charter school application that I was involved with, one was years and years and years ago when Jason was general counsel, and the law was very different then than it was even before these changes. We, each member... had the rubric, they spent time on their own. That wasn't a group effort.
Mm-hmm.
That was going through the rubric, coming up with questions, really analyzing the plan. Will this work? All of that sometimes was a group, sometimes it was individual, because each individual had to not only score it, but it was a lengthy process of my initial review of the application. Here's what I found.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we have given the applicant time to address our concerns, here's additional information. Did it, were all your concerns covered? Yes, no.
Yeah,
so it's a lot of information, and the board got all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
We did a presentation with it. Condensed,
mm-hmm.
but gave
good.
Board members every rubric,
that's good.
Which was, I can't even remember how many pages now.
It was a lot.
38, 40 pages, I want to say. So it was a ton of information.
That's thorough.
It was. And a lot in that, so Dan, to your questions, that process will stay the same. None of that changes. So there is, if we approve or deny the application, you are going to see some strikeouts on page 2 with approval. Those pieces have been taken out of the state law, and you're going to see some additional blue in page 3 with denial. It gave some specific deadlines. In years past, we did have, if there was an amended charter school application, the last group did that. We had to give information, but there weren't as specific a timelines. So now we've got very specific timelines, and that appeal would then be filed with the Tennessee Public Charter School Commission. So that's your other authorizer. They'd have an opportunity to authorize, and they have a hearing just like we do with all that information. And I know it's a lot to digest. So our next one, and these will be 2 readings. So I'm sure, you know, y'all, as you've had an opportunity to look through, you may have additional questions. So 1902 is charter school agreements. Some of that was in the previous application because there was not as much guidance before the change in the law and the regs and rule changes. So we now have very clear things that have to be in a charter school agreement, which, of course, the lawyer likes. There are also performance standards that have to include. So with the application, we're looking at academic, financial, and then organizational performance standards. So we have that academic piece, the finance, and then what I'm going to call operations. Those are now set out with clear, we want student achievement, we want growth, incorporate state federal accountability systems. We've got to have that financial stability, as Dan mentioned earlier. And then we've got financial management standards, state and federal legal requirements. And that is why our team has been so large in the past, because what we've done is finance is covered, operations is covered, academics. One of our charter schools was special education. So special education, it was an ABA school. So all of those, and we would have to establish very specific expectations in that charter school agreement. So fee-based services, in the past, a charter school can request that the authorizer, so if the Williamson County School Board authorized, they could request that they pay us and we provide busing, or they pay us and we provide food, cafeteria. That's part of the negotiation. That should be in their application moving forward. That wasn't a responsibility previously. So if we agreed to a fee-based service, that's going to be in a separate agreement because we would negotiate that. That would not be a reason that we could approve, renew. Yeah. So that's a little bit different than how that has been in the past.
So just out of curiosity, so like the fee-based services, would those be outlined after approval or before? Would that be like a part of the application process?
It's typically a part of the application process. So
Okay. The
application's broken down into a lot of different areas, and a lot of those are in the operation piece.
Okay.
The transportation, student management, I keep thinking electronics is what is in my head, technology, all those different components. We also, they could, fee-based services, counseling, school site, all of the different things that we as a public school offer, they could try with a fee-based. But that was, again, not being the performance standards. it would be in a different agreement. Okay, so this next one is a brand new concept. 1903 charter school oversight. So once Williamson County Board of Education authorizes a public charter school, then the WCS board has to oversee and annually evaluate that charter school to ensure they meet the performance standards and targets set out in that charter school agreement. So a different board will be running the day-to-day operations, will be making those decisions, but ultimately this board would have the oversight to see if they are they actually meeting the high quality standards that we put in that charter school agreement.
So with that, So the board doesn't physically do that, so which means we have to have employees, then we have to hire, and so we have to get the county commission to be able to authorize the funding if this happens. And then also, it says the board shall create a comprehensive performance accountability. We don't create anything.
Correct. So while the board does that, it's going to be staff that's going to do that.
Right.
And I'm going to be real blunt. We don't have the staff to do all this.
Right.
So there would be a request for additional staffing. Most districts our size who have charter schools have an entire department.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before this law changed.
Right.
Because it takes that much. We've been relying on the leadership team and our directors to do a lot of things that if we actually had a charter school, we could not. So that's an excellent point, Sheila. There would be a...
another team, basically.
There would have to be.
Yeah.
Yes.
So now, but the word the board shall create, though, we're not... Now, I literally take the board as us.
Sure.
We don't literally create something. We approve what has been created, but we don't actually create it. Now, I'm probably just fine hairs there, but that's kind of... I'm always worried about that.
I understand what you're saying. Yes. You statutorily, that is your responsibility.
Right.
However... would y'all actually create that?
No.
No. So I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
The superintendent's evaluation. Y'all approve that tool.
Right.
It is not created by y'all. It would be something with direction that staff would create.
Yeah, okay.
And part of that is going to come... from that agreement, from that charter school agreement. So I kind of look at it the same way I did the strategic plan. What's our end game? And to ensure that we get that, what steps do we need from a compliance standpoint?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. Thank you.
Absolutely. No, I...
Who does our compliance in all this for Williamson County Schools?
A lot of it.
Yeah,
TLA. TLA.
So, but as I'm reading this, it'll be really hard to define those goals in a fair and reasonable manner of what achievement would look like. Because in our county, we have schools that are at varied ranges of achievement already. So, it'll take a lot of thought and conversation
and so
to make it a fair system.
When we say create, it would be meetings. It's not going to be in a bubble. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because part of this is you're basically building another school.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the structures that we have in place, we might duplicate, we might not. Depends mm-hmm. upon the charter school and what their mission is.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
To your point, really the state report card is our compliance tool.
Right.
That's what I was going to say. It's probably more what the state... deems is achieving.
But if you pull out one charter school, it would be hard to define what we would recommend to you all to say that is good achievement or adequate progress.
Because you're in Williamson County.
Define that initially
after
the school gets going, and then you have certain achievement levels that you would and growth expectations, but that initial setup would be very challenging.
Right. So we couldn't just say as the board shall create, which would be asking for money to support this. That's all we would do. The oversight.
Say that again.
The oversight. As we're creating this, we couldn't just say, well, why can't the state be the oversight? Because what you're saying is it's one particular school.
Right. So if the state charter school commission approves, they've got several schools, public charter schools that they are overseeing. Metro has several public charter schools that they're overseeing and a department that oversees that.
But if our board approves it,
we own it.
Absolutely.
No, I agree. Yeah.
That belongs to us, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it will. Yeah. Which now y'all see why I wanted some things out in policy, because it's a very different structure than what we've had in years past. So one of the other pieces, and this is going to be in the next couple of policies, is Williamson County School Board, if they authorize, you are also going to have to articulate and enforce any consequences for failing to meet performance expectations or compliance requirements. And I've got that kind of set out in one of the next policies. So the superintendent operations piece would have to implement the performance and compliance monitoring system. So to your point, Sheila, staff would be the ones who are actually day-to-day, month-to-month, making sure they're going to meet their goals. Or if they're not, communicating that to the board so you're not surprised if there's a problem. Information will be provided to the board on an ongoing basis. I would anticipate it would look much like the strategic plan. However, the board wanted that information. It'd be the responsibility of the superintendent and staff to make sure that y'all understood where they were, just like you understand where the district is. Site visit to each charter school shall be conducted annually, and that to collect data and other qualitative information. So think about when you visit our schools, the things that you can't get off of a piece of paper. You can't get school culture. You can't, you know, those kind, that's why the site visit is mandated. What does a day look like? What does a classroom look like? What's the quality of the instruction or not quality of the instruction? All of those things are kind of your qualitative information. We would have to develop a site visit procedure, just like we do when we have site visits. You know, there are, depending upon who's going out there, there's different things our staff knows we're looking for. The board / staff shall provide the charter school with a report that summarizes the outcome of the visit. Are y'all, as a board, are you happy with where they are? Are there things they need to be changing? And it shall provide an analysis of relative data and include general recommendations. Again, this is the language from the statute. It would be with assistance of staff doing all of this. There is also charter school reporting. So there's certain information that the charter school, if we were the authorizer, they would have to give to us. And there's also, they have to have an annual audit of all accounts and records, just like our schools do, just like central office does.
And that, you'd have to do that.
We would have to have that, yes, sir. And then Rachel and her team would have to, you know, look at that to keep y'all apprised. How is that going? It would also include any internal school activity and cafeteria funds. And then by December 1st, there's a report that would be due to the Department of Education. So we can get an authorizer fee of $38,000. So that is not going to cover much with the work.
Isn't it 35,000?
I thought it was 30. Well, maybe.
I think it's 35 or 3%, whatever it was.
I thought it was more, but you could be right. It's, hold on.
So the
Do you think it's less?
So the TISA funding that we actually got more of is kind of dwindling slowly.
Well, that this won't affect our TISA funding, like our student-based formula. It's just an additional. Charter schools and TISA get 3% as a bonus.
Well,
like a,
but
there's been some additional changes under the State Board of Education.
But and because of our staffing, that affects us. I mean, indirectly, our, it does affect us in the TISA funding. Because TISA doesn't pay for our staffing to do this,
right?
Correct.
So let's say a charter application goes through the process and is passed.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to come to the board and say we need $100,000 for staffing, all this stuff that's got to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you can't reject the school because of that.
Reject.
I've got it in there.
It's 35.
Oh, thank you. 35,000. Forget my 38. 35. We've lost $3,000. I would not recommend, to your point, that that be a reason to legally, that be a sole reason to legally deny a charter school.
Because we have the ability to pay as a county. We just choose not to in some raise taxes
well,
and stuff like that.
We've got the ability to pay, but also, you know, we're paying for, what, 200, 300, 400 teachers extra?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
I think those are fair questions I wouldn't to ask because
right,
there is
right.
100% going to be an impact because of the additional pieces that didn't exist before. I don't think that's going to be a part of the rubric. But
see, I think that should be.
I know.
I think if you're going to charter a school, that they should know what it's going to cost.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you hire one administrator. That's $80,000-$90,000 a year.
Oh yeah. No, I think they would know.
Yeah.
Right. I think they would know from the charter school what would be salaries. I don't think that we could look, and maybe I misunderstood your question, I don't think we could look at what additional burden it's going to put on the district for our staff.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that to be a sole reason.
Right.
I think those are great questions that need to be asked during the process.
Well, and something else to consider, too, is that would the charter school be filled with 100% non-attending public students. Does that make sense? There might be some crossover where we'll lose some students.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So there'll be a, like a, it'll be
a swap.
Yeah, there'll be a swap because I think.
But still, you're going to have to.
Yeah.
When you start thinking of administration to do all this stuff.
It's a lot.
And this is state law.
Yes, sir. Or State Board of Education policy.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely more meat on the bones from that State Board of Education policy than...
That's at 6111?
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think this is going to make it harder for a charter school to get in here?
This is more for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to make it more difficult. I think...
Well, the rubric hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware
of. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but I do think... it adds to your responsibilities as elected officials, yes. As well as, ultimately, district staff, central office staffs.
But to your point, I think it also makes them aware, though, that they are being overseen because we have it in policy.
Right.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think that's
I think it's both. I mean, I think that, to me, if I wanted to bring forth an application, it very clearly sets out what the expectations are,
mm-hmm.
which I think is good.
I think it's
mm-hmm.
good. They don't waste anybody's time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so if we can't meet these,
don't bother.
Be prepared to be denied.
Yeah.
If you can meet them.
Yeah.
So the next piece is the intervention and ultimately a revocation. So again, this is new. We can intervene. We would, the superintendent or designee would have to give the charter school notice of any charter agreement violations or performance deficiencies. We would have to give the deficiency, the regulation or the performance or the contract that's not being achieved, the expected remedy, and then a time frame. So obviously there could be interventions and then the charter school corrects those interventions and then you just continue with the oversight. If after that initial they do not correct if their deficiencies, then you're going to see tiered, there's three tiers of progressive interventions that's now set out. So we've got to give them a notice, and it would be from the board saying that charter school, here's your notice, here's the specific deficiencies, and here's the documentation, either the regs, the agreement, whatever. And failure to comply with those terms of either the application, the charter school agreement, that's a potential outcome. And you may be in violation of federal or state law. That's a potential outcome. On that tier one, we're just letting them know, look, here's your terms. You're not in compliance. Here is a action plan and some possible consequences. So the first one's really a notice. It's a letter. It would be a formal letter, but it would give them time to correct those deficiencies. If during that timeline they were not corrected, then there's a tier two, and we could place them on probationary status. So if tier one is not successful, then there is another letter sent to the governing board where they're placed on probation, and it outlines the terms of their probation and a timeline for correction. So for instance, if they have corrected some of the deficiencies from tier one, great. If they have gotten worse or just not made any corrections, then we could place them on probation. If the final is when we review that status, because remember we've given them a timeline, they've not corrected the deficiencies during their probationary period, then the recommendation would be to revoke the charter contract or other sanctions, which could be monetary, could be some oversight sanctions. Those would be up to the board. And part of it would depend upon what is the deficiency. A violation of state or federal law, you may view differently as a board than academic performance. You may not. That the tiers are set, the requirement of having the progressive interventions is set out in law and state board policy. What we choose to do, the time frame, all of those things are up to the board's discretion. And I'm going to say a lot of that's going to depend upon what the deficiencies actually are. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Charter schools have to notify their board when notify our board when a deficiency has been remedied. If they are requesting an extension of time, or if they're requesting a modification to the corrective action plan. So if they are not able to implement the interventions, those are not successful, then there is a charter school revocation. This board can revoke a charter school agreement, and it sets out how and why, if the charter school failed to meet sufficient progress, committed a material violation of any of the conditions, standards, procedures, failed to meet generally accepted standards of fiscal management, or performed any of the acts that are conditions for non-approval of charter schools under state law. We would have to give them notice, 30 days in writing, and then the board would vote to renew, not renew, or revoke a charter school agreement. And then the superintendent has to give that decision to the Department of Education. There is a provision in the law regarding revocation due to priority status. The board may revoke a charter school if that charter school is identified as a priority school under state law. That revocation would take effect immediately following the close of the school year. Hopefully that is never an issue, but I did put that in policy because that is state law. And then it also sets out we would need to develop administrative procedures for closing down a charter school. So it would be very similar to if we decided to close a school or a program. We would need to make sure that parents know. We would need to provide student records. And then the finance piece of what's the assets, what's the liability in accordance with state law. Because remember, if we're the authorizer, they have their own board, but it's us. So
do we need to have both paragraphs under the revocation due to priority status? Because the first one says we can do it after the first time they are identified as a priority school, and then the second one says if they're two consecutive years in a row or two cycles.
So I don't know that we do. The only way, and I don't know that unless there'd have to be a whole lot of changes, that we would accept something if at some point WCS became an authorizer of an existing charter school that was authorized by the state from 2017. So probably not.
Because then,
I mean,
even
if they did,
still be the first year for us.
And it would still be, if it'd be a long shot if that happened, and if it did, it still would be governed. Yeah, I don't have any issue with that. Yep.
Any other questions on that one, guys?
All right. Last one.
Woohoo! All right, charter school renewal.
Sure.
So they're now set out in our state law, as well as this updated policy, times when we have to review a charter school. So everything's going like it should be. There's not a notice of deficiencies. Then we would have to, after the fifth year, conduct an interim review. The Department of Ed has guidelines, so that is what we would use to conduct that. And then as part of that process, charter school submits a report on the progress of the school and achieving the goals and objectives. Obviously, that would be submitted to the district, but it would also be information that the board would need and would be given. 3 months prior to the date that they are required to submit that renewal application, we, superintendent designee, submit a performance report to the charter school that summarizes their record over that period of time, and you know, how are you doing, and do you think, we also give them a perspective of do you think that you're going to be renewed. So if there are any issues, they've got that 3 month period of time to kind of see where we are. Application and evaluation. So on no later than April 1st, the year prior to the year the charter school agreement expires, the governing body of a charter school, so their board, would submit a renewal application to the board. So there is a form, just like the initial application, and then there is a renewal evaluation site visit. And then a report to the board, because ultimately the board will be the one who makes that renewal decision. The year by February 1st, the year the charter school agreement expires. The way that this is contemplated, neither party should really be surprised, because you're getting updates, the public's getting updates. If the school is performing well, then I would think it would be extended. So there is renewal criteria. We're looking at that charter agreement, and then the renewal decision is also going to be on the renewal application, those annual progress reports, and then the renewal performance report. Again, shouldn't really be a surprise for either party. If everybody's doing what they should do, then within 10 days after voting by resolution, superintendent or designee lets the charter school governing board know the recommendation. They do have a right to appeal if renewal was denied and they didn't like that decision. Again, to me, the renewal process should be one of the least cumbersome of all of the other decisions that we have made prior to.
Well, Dana, thank you for putting this together. Yeah. This is really good.
I learned a lot tonight.
Well, good. Yeah. I'm glad. It is a good...
It's nice to have direction.
It is, and I'm happy that we have it right now when we're not... Y'all aren't having to make decisions.
Right.
It's you've got some time to really look at it and ask questions, and I like that.
And what is the charter application due? February 1st, you said?
So
if they're going to do it for the following year?
If they're going to be letter of intent, we typically know by the beginning of December.
Okay.
And then February 1st is the initial application. So we typically, if there is a, how we've handled it in the past, is if we've gotten a letter of intent, recommendation for the review committee is at your January meeting for the board to vote on.
Okay.
So we, in years past, have gotten the people together in December and then made a recommendation.
Cool. Sounds good.
Okay.
And the superintendent picks the committee.
Initially picks the committee. What we've done in the past is a memo to the board with who is recommended, and typically recommended a chair. Last time, Lee Webb was the chair. The time before that, it was a school for students with disabilities, and Marie Griego was the chair. And so the memo would have the names, titles, visit community member, and then internal, because we've always had at least a couple of community members involved, because their perspective is great. And I think everyone has either been a current or former parent at WCS, if I'm remembering correctly. So.
Great. So this was a lot of information. But thank you.
I mean, it took a minute.
And if we have, as you all dig through this, I know we haven't had a chance to probably digest it all, but we can email in questions in advance of the work session, and I'm sure it'll come up that night. So we'll get everyone kind of clear on it.
So email any questions to the whole group, the school board email,
I'd
or just to you?
If you've got questions, email them to me and Jason, and I'll get you answers. I won't talk as much, but I will cover some of this at the work session just because it's very different than how we've handled the charter schools in the past, but I do think it is helpful because it gives y'all more guidance than we've had in the past. So.
Great. All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, how are you?
Wow.